Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Jimmy, Kyle, and producer Dave. That's your boy, PD. And today, we're going to be talking HBO's new hit series, The Last of Us. This is going to be Season 1, Episode 5. And before we get into it, you guys know the drill. If you want to support the podcast, why don't you go over to BingetownTV.com? That has our entire catalog of all the shows we've covered. We've hit The Mandalorian, The Boys, Haunting of Hill House, and everything in between. Currently, right now, besides The Last of Us, we're working on Yellowjacket Season 1. That's going to be releasing a Season 2, which we are also going to be covering in March. Shadow and Bone is coming up. I already mentioned The Mandalorian, but we got another season of that in March. So we got a lot of good stuff coming up. Again, just go over to BingetownTV.com and you can find everything that we got going on. And one more thing, the easiest, best way you can support the podcast is just wherever you're listening right now, hit that subscribe button. That's all you got to do. Please and thank you. But yeah, episode 5, here we go. Entitled Endure and Survive. Episode 5 was a banger, guys. I really liked it. I hope none of us got too attached to Kathleen, Henry, or Sam, because, boy, they are dead as can be at the moment. But, yeah, it was a really good episode, and the IMDb ratings suggest that as well. It is currently standing at a 9.6, which is, that's about as good as it gets on IMDb. So,
oh yeah,
the fandom liked it. You guys are nodding your approval. Looks like you guys liked it. And yeah. Kansas City fell to the infected. Like
to the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah. it is worth mentioning. This is a Sunday recording. Obviously, The Last of Us. This episode dropped on Friday. So we are nice Sunday afternoon recording pre-Super Bowl.
Baby.
Yeah, I've been talking a while. Someone take it from me.
I just want to say that I think it's funny. That like the way you're talking makes it seem like we didn't watch the episode together, where you're like, oh, you know, like I hope you guys liked it too and stuff. Like we were literally all in the room together watching.
Well, Jimmy,
we were
wasn't.
All like, woo, yeah, it was great. So that's funny. I mean, yeah, it was fantastic. I have one small gripe, but that's it. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Best episode of the season so far for me. Sam and Henry were incredible. My heart was ripped out of my fucking chest at the end of this episode. I wasn't expecting it. I was really hoping that maybe they could live. Everyone just goes their separate ways and we reconvene maybe at the end of the season. But unfortunately, that was not the case. And I had to sit on the thoughts of Henry and Sam's story arc coming to a close for a couple days now. And it still hurts to talk about.
Me and Brian knew that this one was going to cut deep.
Yeah, we did.
Very, very deep playing the video game. And it cut deep watching it. And I think they did it. It was very similar. They did it very similar in the TV show, but it cut deeper in the TV show. And they did it very, very well. Sam and Henry, it was interesting to hear what you guys thought was going to happen with me and Brian knowing what was actually going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there during the episode. We're getting the whole, you know, cute scenes with Ellie and Sam. And then Henry and Joel are kind of having their talks and everything. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, this feels like an anime. They're building us up with these great scenes to just completely knock us down later. I thought it was only going to be Henry that was going to be taken out by maybe a zombie and Sam would somehow live. But as Kyle said, when I was making these comments, he's like, you know, Joel's not out here running a daycare. So something's got to happen to Sam. I didn't want to believe something would happen. And it was the worst thing I think I could have imagined for either of those two people.
Yeah. And I have to agree with you, Jim, as a video game player. We did know this was coming. It definitely hit home, even though we did know what was coming. And for what it's worth, I think the kind of final scene where it's the murder suicide, whatever you want to call it, that again felt like one of those moments that was just plucked right out of the video game. Even like the aesthetics in the yellow room, it was just like really well done. But of course, there were some slight differences in the storyline of Henry and Sam, and I'm sure we're going to get into it. But if we have kind of our instant reactions out of the way, let's get into this episode. It can be pretty well defined. The first part is just kind of showing us Henry and Sam, what they were getting into in Kansas City prior to Joel and Ellie crashing through the storefront. So the first scene we get is, I just referred to it as Kansas City's Independence Day from Fedra. It kind of takes us right to the moment where the people reclaim the city, and I mean, the people aren't operating much better than what I would expect Fedra had been operating, you know, executing people point blank, like pretty nasty business gaining your independence in Kansas City. But Dave and Kyle, I'll open it up to you. What were you guys thinking about the scenes?
At the time, I mean, you're right. It's kind of not shocking, but it's definitely brutal to watch. But I think they give you context a little bit later on in that it, I mean, I don't want to say it's necessarily deserved, but it felt kind of deserved after you learn that like Kansas City's Fedra has like a really notorious reputation for being just like absolutely terrible people. So and they do it, they weave it throughout the episode of like who's good, who's bad, no one's actually good, here's the bad things they've done, but they've done them for these reasons. So it's like, okay, you can empathize with all of them, I guess, or maybe sympathize. But It was definitely like brutal to watch. But like as Dave has said before, they've done a really good job of starting these episodes with the flashbacks. So it was like really nice to get that context.
Yeah, it was absolute savagery. I mean, you see the one truck dragging the body with like a bunch of knives in its front just through the streets of Kansas City. I mean, it was tough to watch. They were saying in the episode that Kansas City had, you know, some of the worst Fedra agents. And so it makes sense that the people would act just as savage back to them. I also think that it was interesting getting the third party of the collaborators here, because I don't know if that will be like a faction or grouping of other Fedra QZ zones, but just having the collaborators who weren't specifically with Fedra, but were, you know, kind of just snitching on things that were going on in the QZ to Fedra. I thought that was an interesting perspective, and especially with a character like Henry, who morally seems like a good person, but then is now placed in this position of what is right, what is wrong. He has to, you know, rat out some of his friends potentially to work with Fedra in order to get it a cure that, you know, they aren't just willingly going to give him. So I thought it was an interesting dynamic of the collaborators in this episode.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the Boston QZ, the Fireflies, I mean, this is kind of their ultimate goal, no? I don't know if they maybe have done it as brutally. It feels like, I wonder if the way they would do it would look any similar, or if it would be maybe a little bit more organized. That's just a question shouted out into the void, but it just made me think of like the comparison between the two groups.
Yeah, to me, I think they're trying to paint the picture that these guys are less kind of organized than the Fireflies. They seem like a national kind of like organized resistance that's fighting Fedra at like,
multiple places.
Yeah, multiple places, larger scale, whatever. I think these are just people who like,
just fed up with it.
Casey Fedra sucked. Like they were worse than the Fedra that we saw in Boston. At least that's what they're kind of giving to us, telling us. I don't know. So anyway, continuing on with this, Dave, you were talking about the collaborators, which weren't really a concept they explored in the games, as I recall. So the collaborators are kind of for the TV show, but Kathleen is just rounding them up, and we have this nice little monologue where she's talking to the collaborators and is just trying to figure out where Henry is. Where's Henry? But it's kind of like, did it feel good, like, turning in your friends so you could get, like, apples and alcohol? I feel like this episode did do a pretty good job of giving us, the audience, like, an opportunity to rationalize. See where Kathleen is coming from, really. You know, really did make Henry look bad kind of later on in the episode, where she's like, kids fucking die, bro. Like, world doesn't revolve around Sam, and look at what you cause.
Melanie Lynskey is, she was almost a perfect choice because she is so good at delivering like that, like middle school PTO mom, like tone, but like saying insane shit. Like they're going to just kill people and murder them brutally. Like she says brutal words, but like the way that she says them sounds like a middle school mom giving like a lecture to her like toddler. It's just like that. The dynamic is very interesting. She feels worse almost saying it that way than if she was like, if it was like a guy who was like, if it was like Perry, who's like a soldier saying it, it would feel less like, not creepy as my desk again floats away. it's just, it feels maybe creepier the way that she says it. So it hits harder.
It's like Professor Umbridge, man.
Oh my God.
So the one collaborator finally does break and it's just like, listen, I heard that he was meeting up with Edelstein. I don't know where, but it's somewhere still in the city. And then she kind of walks out, has the information. The guy Perry, is that the bearded guy's name? Yeah. He's like, are we actually giving these people a trial? She's like, what the fuck do you think? These people are not getting a trial. We are going to kill these bastards. And then she just orders everybody to go door to door. And Perry's knee jerk reaction is what Kyle was bringing up. Or I think we were all talking about it last episode. Like, this is not the best time to allocate those kinds of resources just for a singular person manhunt. Like, he's like, come on, this is a very spiteful revenge trek that you're going on. We don't need to do this. But, you know, we're starting to see who Kathleen is as a person and where her priorities lie.
The line was interesting where it was like, you know, he's not my seventh priority, Perry. Is he yours? And he kind of says no. And I guess, like, you do learn later on that they all have a kind of a reason to dislike Henry. But it is interesting that, yeah, it seems like they do have bigger fish to fry than just one guy. I guess technically two if you want to count Sam, but Sam barely counts.
Right.
And that'll take us to Henry kind of meeting up and establishing the hideout in the attic with Dr. Edelstein. So it's Henry and Sam just kind of, they got like 10 cans of soup, whatever. They have enough supplies to last for 11 days while they can like kind of monitor the patrols, figure out what's going on, and essentially just devise a way to escape the city. So we don't follow it very long. It's a 10-day time skip. They're down to their last can. The doctor had left the hideout to get more food, and Sam's just kind of like, hey bro, I'm hungry, and this doctor doesn't seem like he's coming back. You can see Henry's just getting all in his head. Henry's not a survivalist by any means. Like, we find that out. He admits it to Joel, like, I need you if we want to make this work. But this was kind of tough to watch as like, I wouldn't know what to tell this kid either.
Yeah, I mean, Edelstein does say to him too in the beginning when they first meet up, in that Sam is scared because you are scared, Henry. So then she goes and speaks to him. And we have, I guess, even touched on the fact that Sam is deaf, which adds a whole nother layer of like, he really relies on Henry. And Henry obviously feels that level of responsibility. And they did a good job of like kind of putting you into Henry's shoes here. And like you said, it's hard to watch because you got to think, like, when you watch things like this, you're always thinking of what you would do and putting yourself in those shoes. And I can't imagine the level of responsibility he would feel.
It's just so difficult, especially having to watch over someone else. You already yourself are very shaky about the situation. And now not only do you have to care for yourself, but someone else who, at like Kyle mentioned, is deaf. So that just adds another layer of pressure to Henry's character. And I get where he's coming from with, you know, I mean, it's so hard. I couldn't imagine, you know, having to look after someone and then, while also trying to survive, just put on this facade that everything is going to be okay when you yourself have no idea if that's actually the case or not, especially in a position where they are, you know, they're pressed for time. They have 11 days to create a ridiculous plan to get out of the city. So if I was Henry, I totally understand that. I would be feeling the pressure too. I don't think I would be able to hide the fact that I would be scared. And I think he does a good job of kind of making light of the situation to make Sam feel better. But Sam still, even afterwards, I think, doesn't feel fully safe either. But that's just the world that you're going to be living in at this point. It's just, you're never going to feel 100% safe at any moment.
We said it last episode, and they said it in the after the episode, of like Sam and Henry being this mirror of Joel and Ellie. And it's just interesting that like Joel has it so much easier with Ellie. Ellie's annoying. Mm-hmm. And that's like, she just doesn't shut the fuck up. But she's way infinitely more capable than Sam, I would say. Like, she, I mean, not to sound crass, but I mean, she can hear, which is helpful in the sense she's older. She can, you know, can handle a weapon, actually. So like, she is more useful, and Joel himself is more useful. So like, their journey together that we've seen has been difficult, but now we get Sam and Henry's, which is they're playing on expert mode, essentially.
Yeah.
And this was definitely a device they did for the TV show to emphasize kind of how out of their depth Henry and Sam as a pairing are in this apocalypse. I believe Sam was about 13, 14 in the games. He was not like a definitive child. He was a little bit more like aged up to Ellie's.
Okay.
And obviously and he was not deaf. So
right.
They were a much more capable pair, but I think that was a decision for the TV show. Let's make sure the audience knows that they could not survive without Joel.
Yeah, it was good. It was definitely like us feel like way more sympathy and like kind of like cling to them much harder across this one episode because of that.
Is that what you guys were guessing? I mean, we were talking about this last episode. Two guns, Joel and Ellie's face, and you end up finding out that neither of them know how to use the guns. They're unloaded.
Not even loaded, yeah.
Right, exactly. So they're just putting on this crazy facade. So it's a nice fake out.
Yeah, that was great because we find that out way back in the flashback in the first scene where Henry's like, my gun isn't loaded, and Dr. Edelstein's like, neither is mine. So like, you know, at that point, because we've already seen episode four, that they're pointing unloaded weapons at Ellie in the present. So that was really good. That was well done.
Just curiously, from your guys' video game perspective, did you like the idea of Sam being deaf and him being a little bit younger, or was that just completely off key for you guys?
I thought it worked for me, honestly. I mean, they still met the same fate as in the game and they didn't stick around too long, but it didn't register with me until after the episode and I started looking into it. I was like, oh yeah, I guess Sam was like a little older. I kind of forgot he wasn't deaf. I had to like look that up. Yeah.
It's when you get to the part where Ellie and Sam are having the conversation via the writing on the little board that he writes on. That was a full-on word-for-word conversation that they have in the video game, and it's heartbreaking either way. And the fact that I'm watching this and you're sitting there knowing what he's supposed to say because of the video game, but watching him write it and then turning it around to Ellie, I think it was really, really good for the TV show as a transition from the game to the TV show. And I also think that, like Brian was saying, it's just the fact that you have Henry and Sam, you make Sam younger, you make him deaf, the actor, phenomenal, who he's also deaf in real life. It just makes it seem like, just to reiterate what you said, Brian, they needed Joel more and they needed Ellie more, and they needed, it was literally like Joel was going to be taking on two more kids.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, because even Henry is like, not an idiot, but like he doesn't realize kind of the gravity of certain situations. Like Joel has to treat him like a kid sometimes, which I thought was
funny. He's sitting there on the open street going like, yo, bro, my freaking
B-Toms was pissed. B-Toms literally said that loud, like, this guy needs to shut the fuck up.
He was annoying. Yeah, that was like, Henry, come on, brother.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, why don't we just fill in the blanks? So Henry and Sam start to embark, which in Henry's head, he's like, all right, we gotta leave. I don't know how the fuck we're actually gonna do this. But as they're about to open the door, they hear a crash and they look through the window and they essentially just see the entire Joel and Ellie crashing into the storefront, taking out some of the troops, play out. And he looks at Sam and is like, new plan. We're gonna get that guy on our team.
Smart. You see Joel shooting the people that you're going against.
Yeah.
And he taking them out, but not like doing a great job
like a
of
boss.
It. Yeah, so of course your instant thought would be, okay, that is someone we need on our team.
Yeah, and this really hit home of the fact that Sam is deaf, in that Sam's just standing there watching Henry like freak out, looking through the window, and he's like, what the hell's going on?
That's another part of the whole thing we were talking about earlier. With it's so hard for Henry to pretend like everything is okay, because when you are, 50 feet and arms throw away from, gunfire, explosions, those reactions. And, if Sam can't hear them and he's just reading your face, then of course Henry is shitting himself, which is that's going to lead to Sam shitting himself. So,
yeah.
And I was watching because, like you said, Kyle, the first time Henry freaks out when he sees the gunshots or hears the gunshots, I'm sorry. And it was the scene that we already know with Joel and Ellie and three people from the revolution. Sam obviously doesn't duck down and he goes, what's going on? And I'm watching throughout this episode, and the scene where the sniper is shooting, Sam is delayed. when the sniper starts shooting and they're like, down, down, like he has to wait and see everyone else go down before he goes down.
That's good.
It's unbelievable to be in this situation where, you know, we're talking about clickers where you're like, wait, you know, listen for the clicks and you know, it's game over or anything. I mean, to be deaf is you can't imagine
pretty much.
Yeah. You can't imagine how that goes in this kind of world.
Although having sign language as an ability to communicate would be a very useful thing, though I digress. So that brings us to kind of where we left the last episode. Joel and Ellie are held at gunpoint by Henry and Sam. And this kind of very quickly turns into a little bit of a comedy scene where Ellie's like, Joel, come on, dude, just drop like the being a hard ass act. They got a gun to my face. Henry's like, that's good. That's a weird fucking tone, man.
Yeah,
that was perfect. Laughing out loud. I think Joel, just as experienced as he is, could very quickly grasp, OK, this guy is not coming at us maliciously. And I guess Henry even says that I'm not used to this. I don't know what you're supposed to do next in a situation like this. But obviously they start working together. They share their food, which Henry and Sam are, of course, appreciative for. And then that fast forwards us to the next day where Henry essentially just lays out the plan and calls Kansas City Killa City, which was interesting. But cool shot. Them on the top floor of the high rise overlooking the city, and essentially just deciding that they're going to use the tunnels. So anything you guys want to hit here?
I like that Joel immediately recoils when he finds out that Henry is a rat.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't want to work with rats. Yeah. And he's like, well, you fucking do today because you don't got a choice. I like that. It's funny thinking of like the, I guess, culture maybe that permeates throughout separate QZs. And just if you work with Fedra, like we don't fuck with you. Like Joel isn't even a firefly or anything like that. He is a very selfish person in the things that he does, but he still has like that level of connotation for people that work with him.
Right.
I thought it was pretty interesting that Joel brought up, he was like, oh, wow, I heard KC Fedra was like monsters. And he's like, you heard right. I just thought it was interesting that that information about Fedra in a different city would have made it to Boston.
Yeah. Well, I guess Joel, I mean, Tess, they're fairly mobile.
He gets around. But I mean, this really does hammer home what we were saying about Henry. This is a scene where Henry and Sam have the unloaded guns to Joel and Ellie right in their face. And within 2 seconds, Henry gives up the fact that he doesn't know what he's doing. He says, I'm going to trust you, even though Joel is straight up being like, yeah, we're cool, bro.
You're a little sick and the tone's perfect from you.
Yeah, baby. I got that. I'm Batman. But I mean, seriously, though, like he straight up gave up everything. Rachel. But yeah, I mean, so, honestly,
he can't get this thought out. It can't be that important.
Get it out, Brian.
I was going to say, Jimmy, this is the first time I think they bring up the concept of Fedra drove the infected underground 15 years ago, which, as a video game player, I thought that was just how Marvel always just adds the word quantum to something and explains everything they need to explain.
How
the fuck did they drive them underground? And then he says, no, but it's okay. They're not in the tunnels. It's like, if they're not in the tunnels, where else underground? Like, did they just dig a hole and push them in there? Like that, I thought that was lazy writing. They needed to give us a little bit more about how that happened, but they just gave it to us and left it there.
They do say that it's like word of like someone else's word. Like he says that the Fedra agent that he worked with said it. So he's like hearing it through like kind of through the grapevine and it can get distorted a little bit. And I guess the way he says it, that they drove them underground like 15 years ago. And then 3 years ago, they went and cleared the tunnels out.
Cleared it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean,
well, either way, it just seems it is tough to say, you know, we drove them underground because there's no way the infected aren't coming forward. You're literally like, you have to get like shields and really like fill up with all your troops.
Push them down.
Push them. But
yeah, they're not cattle. You can't just like, I just didn't think it made a
Walking
whole lot
Dead
of sense.
Zombies, you could do that much easier.
Oh, yeah. Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can herd them motherfuckers.
And we can get to this in a second, but I actually wanted to text you separately, Brian. And I totally forgot. And I'm not right in what I was saying, but the last episode, and we were talking about the pulsating ground. They really didn't get too much into it, but I'm assuming that our assumption is going to be that it's just where the hole is that's going to implode so that the infected can get out, just like what happened in that part of the town.
Yes. So that brings up
a separate section.
Because my guess, my only guess, because I said it to you on the pod, Brian, I was like, I don't know what this could be. It's not in the game. My only guess is it's a bloater. Now, funnily enough, a bloater comes out. And he's the big dog that comes out. But that's not right. Because I was saying, like, what is there a bloater like laying under the ground that's just like breathing because he's so big? It's like a sleeping dragon. Pulse. But no, I mean, to me, it made it seem like I don't think this is great as like giving an answer because I don't think they did give an answer. But it just seemed like it's where the infected are. And at any time it can implode and they can come out just like it did in the town.
Now that you're saying that, it does feel a little bit too disconnected of like, they showed us that scene of like the ground breathing where it was like, hey, they're underground. And then they tell us they're underground, but then we go way far away from where we originally saw it. And it actually happens that the disconnect in the distance does feel weird. It would have made a feel like more sense if it happened there in that spot.
And then it messed up. And I joked, I said, like, are we going to get an answer? And you guys are like, if we don't get an answer, that's ridiculous. At this point, it does seem like if you said you have a strife and it's not that, Kyle, I'm excited to hear what you're going to say. But that was my thing. I just wanted to know what the deal is with that.
I feel like I'm always playing devil's advocate. I'm on your guys' side. I think that this was, if anything, my biggest complaint of the episode was not getting the explanation of how the crater was operating and how we were able to get so far away from the town and still have all those clickers underground. But the only thing I could think of is if they were like, just they funneled the clickers down there and maybe they started throwing people who were bitten and stuff, like they started throwing them down there. So there was just like a miles of stretch of just clickers underground and not like they were just connected through the town and the city itself. Again, that still just doesn't feel like great writing because they didn't vividly explain that to us. Like,
we talked about that too in person at the episode, and it just would be so asinine to throw people down there who have been bit rather than just killing them.
Yeah,
burn them.
Like, you would just kill those people first of all. But I get also, I mean, I don't know, they're kind of crazy, obviously, the infected. So like, if they're underground, do they like make their own tunnels almost where they're just running around down there? And are happening. And we talked, I guess, episode two, we see that like it like has the actual connections of like fungus growing through the ground and stuff.
Right.
It still is. I agree with you. It literally happens in the suburbs when we saw the original like breathing ground was obviously in the middle of the city. So that geographical disconnect is definitely like a little bit jarring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For me, they just didn't give us enough about the mechanics of it. And they also emphasized that Kansas City seemed to be the only like, that's the only thing Fedra did right here is they drove him underground. So I don't think other people took this approach. All that is to say, I don't think we're going to see this again. I think they're probably think just going to leave it here.
That was the answer. That was what they were going with it. And
so a little bit lame, but like Jimmy has said, this wasn't in the video game. So this kind of was just filler stuff that they put in. So there
visually, it looked great. We'll get to obviously talk about
visually phenomenal. And honestly, if you don't even show me that, you know, because we said that the pulsating ground was going to be something where Perry says, Kathleen, we have to take care of this. And then she's going to go after Henry instead. And that's her first priority. And then, you know, the seventh priority is the pulsating ground because she doesn't want to scare the people and blah, blah, blah. And then we were joking that it was probably going to turn into, oh, she made the wrong decision and shit's going to hit the fan. Well, you don't even need to show us that pulsating ground. You can literally just have Henry say to Joel, man, they put the freaking clickers infected underground and then just have it be a part with the cool visual where the ground implodes and they come running up. I don't see why it didn't have any kind of narrative effect on Kathleen. So why show it in that way?
Yeah.
Except for the fact that she just got killed right there. But
well, I mean, it did have a narrative effect.
She's kind of skipping these bigger deals for like this personal vendetta thing. But I agree that they could have maybe done it in a different way. Like when she even says to Perry earlier on, it's obviously in a flashback of, you know, is he's your seventh priority blah, blah, blah. And it kind of they could have had a conversation about like how they know that there's infected underground and things like that. And like that will come up eventually, something like that, without showing us like this specific spot. So like the idea is planted in our head and then it comes to fruition at the end of the episode. Maybe they thought it was too obvious. I don't know.
I was not this upset until we started like discussing it at length. So like when I just watched the episode, I was like, wow, this looks awesome. So
No, it's not that big of a deal. The episode was amazing.
We're just doing our due diligence as a podcast. That's it.
True that. So let's continue on here. They do make it to the tunnels. You know, Ellie and Joel wield their guns and Henry has a party once they step one step into the tunnels, start screaming, "My plan worked. It's so perfect. Shut up, dude." But yeah, what did you guys think of the tunnels? In the games, I was a little disappointed they didn't encounter any infected down there, because as I recall, there kind of sporadically were, and I think that just would have been pretty cool. But obviously, for the purposes of the show, the big thing was kind of this classroom aesthetic, and it just kind of shows how different people chose to deal with or survive the outbreak. These ones made a community underground, and I thought it was really cool.
This was actually, so he said that they cleared them out of the tunnels. And it made it seem like Fedra cleared them out of the tunnels. This was like a, this seemed like a school for Fedra kids, because they have like the drawing on the wall that's two Fedra agents and it says like our heroes or whatever. So that's what it made it like. They might have initially put them on the ground, and then like, because Fedra, I guess, was corrupt and they wanted to do things for themselves, and they cleared some out so that they could have like schools and things down there, like so that their family would be away from the danger. I'm thinking that the all of the infected that come out from the ground were like the school children and teachers and families of Fedra that were living down there in the tunnel. So that's how they were down there.
And that would be great, because that explains the child zombie that eats Kathleen as well. So I think that's actually a really good point that you,
I'm taking it. It's kind of whatever. That's why this isn't like, that idea wasn't really my gripe. We'll get to my gripe, but that's how I took it. But it was still like, I mean, this is the first time we feel like we've watched them have fun.
It was
a nice, like, kind of oasis and in this the middle was, of all the BS.
And this was the moment for me where I was like, one of these, Henry or Sam, is totally dead, because Ellie and Sam are getting along with the comic books. They're playing soccer. They're having a blast. And Joel and Henry are also connecting on a small level, because this is where Henry kind of lays out everything that he is exactly. He's a collaborator, but it was a little bit more complicated that, because Sam had leukemia. And so he did everything in his power. He had heard rumors of, I guess, this drug or pill that he could provide Sam that would kind of cure it. But in order to do that, he would need to kill the resistance leader in, spoiler alert, Kathleen's brother.
Which would lead to him dying.
And but, the one thing Henry says, too, is that he was the kind of man that you want to follow. Like, unlike Kathleen, who they've already showed us is very flawed, the guy that he turned in was like a very righteous leader, someone who inspired hope and stuff. Henry respected him as well.
You can
We were waiting for them to reveal his name to be James, Jimmy, because Kathleen, like, his name was James, and it was James and Kathleen, and then you and Kathleen. Ready for it, and it obviously didn't happen. But
chances of that would have been so small.
They missed that. But that would have been amazing.
But this was just, it was hard to hear. It was hard to listen to, because Henry clearly had to pick between his brother and a good friend of his, and he chose his brother, which I would never be able to make that decision in a million years, nor do I hope that I ever have to make a decision like that.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that a little later when Kathleen and Henry have their discussion about this.
But this sad backstory was, for me, the moment where I knew one of their fate was going to be sealed.
It was honestly a little bit of an immersion break for me, just because, like, so it's 2003 when the outbreak happens. And so throughout the outbreak happening, and however many people we've lost, between then and now, we've somehow created this miracle cancer drug, cures Sam of leukemia, which like felt to me of like, how the fuck did we? I mean, I guess maybe it was an offspring of trying to create a vaccine or a cure to actually being infected. But that just like was something I was thinking about of like, how the fuck did they discover that while the whole world went to shit 20 years ago?
I took it as it was leftover medicinal supplies from before the outbreak. That's why it was such a hot commodity. Unless I explicitly said that, which would be fucking crazy.
No, yeah, I just, because I guess I wasn't when I was.
But what, either way, 2003,
I was 7 years old.
Him.
I guess I wasn't hip at seven to what kind of the leukemia drugs were at the time.
I didn't even know
we had that back then.
Well, before we move on, I do want to bring up a couple things. The first thing would be the picture that was drawn, the cartoon, and you guys are bringing up the Fedra agents. So they're actually not Fedra agents, but you're not going to get this at all from the TV show. Now, this is if you only played the game, and this is actually only if you played the game and did the Easter eggs to find like the notes throughout the game. You learn this through notes. Yep. I'm not going to give the full deal, but they take the exact picture from the game and you see that it says our protectors and one's named Ish and one's named Danny or Dan, I think it said. And basically the deal is that Ish was someone that could protect the people. They go underground. Him and Danny are the protectors. They decide that they're going to be the ones protect the kids and the families. And I don't want to go any further, but basically yep. they're the protectors. And then what happens is one day, one random time, someone leaves the door open, a clicker gets in and it freaking infects everyone and the whole thing blows up. So it's actually two guys. They're not Fedra agents. And they actually, I believe Ish. And this is, again, I haven't played the game in a long time. I believe Ish and his romantic interest escape. But the romantic interest, her name was Susan. Her kids were there. They got infected. They got out with some kids so that those are like their adoptive children. The two protectors got split up. They assume one of them died. And, you know, it's just this the note is being written and Joel is picking up the notes throughout the game in Pittsburgh.
Interesting.
Because the game is in Pittsburgh, not Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So they just change a couple other things. But also, I thought it was another surreal thing where you're going down into the tunnels and they have this whole setup because it's in the game as well. 100%. They changed a couple things, but it's just amazing to see because you walk through it. You're picking up the notes. That's how you start to find out the story. It's just another one of those things where it's like one giant Easter egg. That was amazing.
The Savage Starlight comics that they were reading, yes. I assume those were in the game as well.
They are also collectibles in the game in Pittsburgh. Yep.
So that kind of does it for the tunnel scene.
This is where we get the name of the title, though. The name of the title of the episode is Endure and Survive. Yeah. Ellie and Sam are having a moment over the comic books and where they're kind of quoting some of the lines from the comic book. And the big one is Endure and Survive.
I love how later Joel's just like a little redundant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They both make fun of it. And I also want to bring up the fact that you see Joel look over at Ellie and Sam. And you could see, like, again, we're getting the trajectory and the transition into the fondness that he has for her. And you see him looking over at the both of them having fun and laughing. And then he turns to Henry and he says, listen, man, you know, I shouldn't have said that. You know, if you're trying to protect your brother, I understand. It's like another layer. And then the fact that Henry comes back at him and he's like, that might not be your daughter, but I know you're a dad. Mm-hmm. That's just more some good shit, you know, for Joel's character.
I was also happy that Sam was Henry's brother and not his son because, A, I guess it makes, I mean, you could argue, I guess it's an angle that makes it a little like less emotional for you because it's like, okay, a brother, not a son. What happens at the end, even though obviously killing your brother would also be difficult, but also because as we've talked about, having children in this world is wildly irresponsible. Obviously, Sam was born after the outbreak, so I was glad that my boy Henry wasn't out here doing that reckless. That making that reckless of a decision while
his
having
fucking
a kid.
Parents were.
Well, yeah, of course they were.
Yeah.
All right. So are we good with the classroom scene? Because that will take us to Kathleen's little villain monologue with Perry. And I got to be honest, guys, I just tuned out. I really couldn't care less about that. She has such a one track mind. It's like revenge on Henry at all costs. I don't care about anything else. Gargle, rinse, repeat. I feel like it's a very one dimensional character. Melanie Lynskey, you did a great job. I just think this character was put into this show to just be filler.
Yeah,
I really liked the line or what Perry says to her and that like we all looked up to Michael, correct?
Right?
James.
Yeah, we all looked up to James Michael James, but like
James Michael, isn't that a guy?
He didn't really change.
George Michael.
Yes.
He's a singer.
There you go.
Like he was a nice guy. Everyone loved him, but he didn't change shit. You know, you did that. You are the reason why everything has changed. So, like, we will follow you. So that kind of hints at like when we were talking the last episode of like, she's a little incompetent. Like maybe she's not the best leader. Like, I mean, she got the shit done. Like the reason why there's no Fedra is because of her.
Well, no,
for better or for worse.
The aftermath obviously is she's maybe not doing the best job in dealing with the fallout. I mean, there's a difference between, I mean, wartime leaders versus peacetime leaders. She seems to be a fairly capable, maybe wartime leader of like actually overthrowing Fedra, but now when it's time to quote unquote, I get at this level, you'd want to, you know, recreate society a little bit. You'd want to get people on houses, get your food together, but they're still focusing on Henry when it's like, come on at this point.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Brian. She's super surface level. Melanie Lynskey did great with what she was given. She's just like the little bit of a higher tier of an NPC boss in the game, and she really doesn't have much to do. But Kyle, to your point, I really did like that. We needed to get some kind of explanation as to why Perry, who seems like he's got the head on his shoulders, like he should have been the leader, why he decided to follow Kathleen. And I think the argument probably could be made, and I think you were kind of getting there, Kyle, that like the wartime general that she is, it was like, it was almost an accident that she did what she did, because her brother dies. She freaks out and she says, revolution, baby, let's go. And, you know, shit hits the fan. There's only one person left to be the leader. It's her, because she's, you know, her brother's dead. She just wants revenge, 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 revenge. Well, now guess what? All the revenge has been taken. Fedra's gone. Good job. You know, I guess you did what you got to do. And now you're just sticking it to one guy. And this is when you're starting to have a problem.
Yeah.
So like, it was an accident that she overturned Fedra and did the right thing, quote unquote, for the people, when really it was just, I'm killing these Fedra bastards because they killed my brother. Oh yeah. And guess what? I guess it does better for all of us that they're overturned.
And I mean, they all have a reason to dislike Henry. I mean, Henry gave up their guy. They all obviously knew Kathleen's brother, James Michael James, and loved him and all this stuff. But I feel like there has to be, they didn't give it to us, but some of those motherfuckers in the Hunters group have to be like, okay, I kind of want like a house.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not three squares, but two square meals a day, you know, like let's get back to being people here. Like, we don't need to continue being, you know, these kind of psychopaths on a rampage.
Yeah. You get to the point where no matter what you're saying, there's still people that have those garbage trucks with the snowplows with the spikes coming out that says run across the side. I mean, you know that there's something crazy going on. They're not just like, I don't know. You know, it was definitely an act of rage that she took over.
There had to just like be some people that were like, does anyone really give a fuck about Henry anymore?
Yeah. Like, it's like,
I mean, if you actually know Henry, like, they should know Henry. If he's part of their civilization or their town, they should know that he's nothing. Like, he doesn't know how to fight. He probably just wants to take care of his brother and get out. Yeah, you want to get some revenge, but if you got rid of Fedra and you only have Henry left to deal with, let him go hide and probably die by an infected you guys live your life.
I mean, Perry says literally that. He's like, you know, your brother would never have wanted you to go this far, but she pretty much just counters that by saying, I'm not my brother. Like, this is how I want to do things, which, yeah, just unfortunately, Melanie Lynskey got this character. I think she still crushed it as its role as it was presented to her. I have such a huge crush on her from this now and Yellow Jackets. Like, I just gush over her nowadays.
For sure. You're like powerful women.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. She crushes it in Yellow Jackets, and she absolutely is a woman in power here in Last of Us. And I just love her.
Who sounds it's like funny. A PTO mom.
Yeah. Dude, it adds such a great angle to the character. I don't know if it's creepy or eerie. I'm not really sure the right word for it, but it's unsettling. Above. The way that she delivers the things that she's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny how different people will see her from different things. Like, I talked to my dad on the phone. I'm like, yo, did you watch Last of Us? You watch episode 4, you see your girl from Yellow Jackets. He's like, yo, that's my girl from 2.5 Men. That's Rose.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah, okay.
That's good. She's getting work. Good. She deserves it.
Sup, everyone. Brian here, host of the TV and Movie Trivia Podcast. It's a trivia-style podcast focusing on TV and movies. Listen in for questions like, what's the name of Michael Scott's screenplay? What do you say to view the Marauder's map? What are Tony Stark's last words to Thanos in Avengers Endgame? And where does Ron Burgundy say he is when he calls the news station sobbing from a phone booth? I've covered The Office, Harry Potter, Marvel, Will Ferrell movies, Lord of the Rings, and more, with even more on the way. So play along to the TV and Movie Trivia Podcast anywhere you get podcasts, and stay tuned for more trivia.
All right, so anything else on
Null?
Kathleen. I was about to say Melanie, but Kathleen, no, we're good. So that will bring us kind of the end game of this episode, where they emerge from the tunnels and are now in suburban Kansas City, kind of the outskirts. Yay, hip hip hooray. They're like skipping along the streets, and then sniper Joel's shot like, rains
relax,
out.
Bro.
Joel is like, relax, bro. Oh, so many things that upset me about Henry.
I was just gonna say B-Toms was like that.
I was just like, shut up, bro. Yell when you get across the bridge. And then when you get across the bridge, also don't yell because they're still fucking infected. Just don't yell. You should never be yelling.
If you want to do a little quiet dance, you do a little quiet dance, but you don't need to be yelling.
Yeah, brush it off your shoulders. Whatever.
I guess he hasn't talked out loud in like 10 days, I guess. So he's kind of getting his fix because he's only been speaking to Sam. He hasn't seen Dr. Edelstein.
Well,
so
good. He's had plenty of practice.
Yeah.
This fucking guy. Yeah. I'm getting heated talking about him. When this I went into this recording, I liked Henry. Now?
Yeah. You're just gassing you're causing your own fuel.
You're getting
fire.
Yourself worked up.
But so let's talk about this sniper standoff. Again, this wasn't such a one for one from the video game. I believe when you're going through this part of the game, it's like in the afternoon, so it's the sun is shining, if I recall. I don't know, but you guys were saying it as we were watching. Oh my gosh, this is just absolute video game material now, just like creeping through the cars and stuff. But yes, they find cover. Joel has a nice moment with Ellie where she's like, no, don't leave us. He's like, do you trust me? You're gonna be fine. You're in charge, because Henry and Sam are definitely not in charge.
Henry tries to run, and he's like, Joel's like, what are you doing?
Again.
He started to run. He started to run, and I was like, this is the moment. This is the moment that Henry's just going to kick the bucket, and Sam's going to be left alone, and I'm going to just hate myself. But it wasn't, thankfully. I guess I would have been. I probably would have been more thankful if he got shot right there than with the ending that he got at the end of the episode.
When
probably.
He ran and didn't get shot, and then Joel keeps peeking and doesn't get shot, and I was like, this guy sucks. And then even Joel is like, this guy's not going to hit shit. Like, as long as you stay here, like, you'll be fine. And then we obviously get the reveal that it's just some old guy who's not even wearing glasses. So it's at night. Right. There's no way this guy can see that well.
I'm glad that they were able to explain that, because as we were watching, it was like, this guy is literally, he's getting some open shots and he's not hitting them. But once we get the reveal of who it is, it makes sense that he
in the vicinity,
be able to.
Like, he's getting close. He can see, I guess, like a blob moving in space. And I guess not to sound ageist, but like, there's no way this was the right guy for the job. Like,
he was a stormtrooper in training. They never hit the
yeah. yeah, exactly. It was wild that they posted. I mean, and again, it could just be that's the way it went, but it's just funny to think about, like, Kathleen picking him, like, because we've said she's made some questionable decisions of sending that guy out there to be the sniper at night.
That could have been his house. That could have been his house, and he could have just conveniently been there, and Kathleen could have rung him up and been like, yo, you're already here, hold him down for as long as you can. But that's a guess. We don't know.
So this happens pretty quick. Joel sneaks around and has the confrontation with this old guy, and Luke, as we were watching this, because Joel isn't going to just execute him. He gives him a second, like, put the gun down, just stay here for the next hour, and you're good to go. And then he looks at his eyes, and he's like, please don't do it, dude. And the guy swings, and Luke just says out loud, wow. The fact that they included Joel, like, having that moment of, like, just don't do it, dude. I've killed so many people. It's something this show just does so very well. Just those small little lines.
His tone there was so heartbreaking, because he is so sick of all this killing. He just wants to live in Wyoming with Tommy and just have nothing to do with anything else. And you could really hear it. And it did break my heart to hear him say that. And then especially when the guy just doubles down on the gun, turns, and then Joel has to do it. It's like, God, even though Ellie's kind of trying to bring Joel back to his old self slowly, it just feels like all these interactions are just not helping that cause. You know, Joel's still just a broken man, and he's just sick of everything that's going on.
I love the unstated confidence in him being like, please don't do it. Cause like, it's a foregone conclusion in Joel's mind that he's obviously going to get the better of him and kill him. So it's like, just don't make me do this.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's just the duality of Joel. You know, he is capable of being ruthless, but he doesn't want to be.
Yeah.
And that's our character. So he is forced to execute the old man. And then through the walkie, he starts hearing Kathleen saying, hey, old guy, just keep him down a little longer. We're almost there. At which point, Joel just immediately starts screaming, run, run, run. Yeah. And this might have been the worst part of the episode. they see these trucks coming from like a half mile away. They could have just dipped off the street.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere but the street, but they go right to the middle of the street, run along the street, and like it just didn't work for me. But
video
like,
game logic, video game,
yeah,
logic.
Video game logic.
It's the
whatever.
Big truck chasing you down. You just got to run in the street. You can't go off the side. It's out of bounds.
What I do love is this forces Joel to be the angel sniper from above, and just Joel taking care of business for the next like 15 minutes is great. But he nails the shot on the driver, causes them crash into the building. Luke was great watching this episode. He was on the edge of his seat like, oh, I'm so glad he hit that shot, man. That
he was
awesome.
It. Joel, this is, I won't give Luke that much props, but it was, he was missing some of the shots though, but he got that. And then when it was like all hell broke loose, Joel was fucking,
oh yeah,
bring him up, knock
he
him
was
down.
The savior. We had unlimited ammo, but
we were laughing at Ellie like popping shots behind her that just absolutely were never going to hit him. But she was
shooting way too low, dude. She was shooting him way too low.
When you think about like looking back on it, how Joel, for the truck driver, at least he did miss the first like three or four shots. But now that we're kind of talking it out, I think it was him getting adjusted to the rifle and just how it shot. Because once he did land that shot on the truck driver, he was just immaculate the rest of the way.
In.
Yeah, he got
he
a
only missed
that gun
again when it was the little kid clicker. I think otherwise he just started nailing everybody.
Mm-hmm. He's about that life. He's a beast.
All right, so to kind of just progress with the events, Kathleen and her troops kind of surround the area. Henry, Sam, and Ellie are just hunkered down behind a car, and Kathleen's like, I know you can hear me. You're in the area. Just like turn yourself in and make it easier for yourself. And Henry kind of does. And it's just like, at least let the kids go. And Kathleen's like, sorry, bro. They're going to have to die too. That's the way the world goes. But this is kind of where Kathleen lays it down. Finally gets this face to face where she's just like, listen, man, maybe Sam was supposed to die. Like kids die all the fucking time. This is what happens when you fuck with fate. And I am very inclined to agree with her. If you're in like a zombie apocalypse, 6-year-old deaf kid gets leukemia, maybe you're just like, yeah, this kid's going to die. I'm sorry. Like, I get
moral,
it. I would do anything
dilemma.
For my family as well. But like,
you can understand Kathleen's frustration for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Like,
yeah,
the kids.
It's not moral, but you can understand where she's coming from. You can see it as like this is a take that she would have.
I think she delivers the lines perfectly here. It's like, why sacrifice a leader of a resistance who is clearly well loved for, again, a child who's 6 years old with leukemia and deaf? It's, you can't make those decisions. I mean, if Alice in Borderland taught me that, is like, you just can't weigh one life against another. It's impossible to do. Everyone has their own, you know, standards and morals, but if anything, you know, this first episode, like episode 4 and all the beginning of 5, you know, we're kind of shitting on her. Like, she's just a one dynamic character. She doesn't really have much going for her. But this scene really, if anything, pushed her over the edge to make me have sympathy for her and be like, okay, I kind of see where she's coming from now.
This was her most well-written scene, I would say.
Yeah,
and this entire scene when Henry like gives himself up and she's like preparing her gun, I was just waiting for Joel to take her the fuck out. But he doesn't get the chance. I think he would have if push came to shove and she like actually pointed the gun, but doesn't get the chance. We see the truck get swallowed up in the ground. And this is where shit hits the fan, guys.
Yeah, it was
the infected just pouring out of that hole looked incredible.
It was beautifully shot. And then all I'm thinking is, these are the World War Z zombies. They're climbing that wall. They're stacking bodies on top of each other to get to where they need to go. Oh, it was so well done. And when they came out of that hole, just sprinting full speed, I was shitting myself. I was like, I don't even know how anyone gets out of this. Yeah, how anyone gets out of this. Dude,
they had those
so
like
doom
buggies. I would have been out.
Oh,
get
my
the
God.
Fuck out of here.
Oh, yeah.
This is brutal. I don't give a fuck. I would have been gone.
It was a great shot, though. The camera's like on the ground, and you just see it perfectly with the hole, and they just sprint out. Oh, man. And then we get the bloater, too. We got introduced to the bloater, which they don't name drop it in the episode, but it's after the episode when they're talking about the creation of it. They tell us it's a bloater. But that thing, I had a feeling that the older ones were going to be a little bigger, stronger, and that was the case here. We don't know. I guess my only question, though, with the bloater is they don't click, though. It seems like the clickers are their own thing.
Bloaters are different. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I didn't even think there was any. It seemed like it was, what, are they, runners?
There's so, runners and there was clickers, but they never dropped this. And it was annoying me for five episodes, especially talking to you guys, because there's definitely a distinction between a runner and a clicker. But we were just saying clickers because that's all they've ever really said on the show, except infected. I kept trying to say infected, but really, if you're not a clicker, you're a runner. And then there's a stalker in the game, which is like the next level. But
so stalker is between a runner and clicker. And as I understand it, clickers are not supposed to be fast. Like, they're very, very strong, but they just kind of like, because they can't see, they just kind of mosey around. I believe all of these ones were technically stalkers, because per the wiki, stalkers have all of the physical strength of a clicker, but they are still capable of running like full speed, like a runner.
I guess the clickers too would maybe have more mushrooms, like restricting their body, like they're more grown out and covered in this stuff that prevents movement, whereas the stalkers and runners are more freshly converted infected, who have more maybe motion in their bodies, is what I'm thinking. But in terms of the bloater, though, the fact that Perry was able to put a whole clip of an AR machine gun into that got me thinking, if Joel and Ellie ever come across one of these things like one-on-one later, it's like, what the fuck are you going to do? Like, it seems like you would need multiple grenades, which we could have used some from Tess back when she died. Yeah. But that seems like the only way, like an RPG. I have no idea.
Yeah. I was pretty disappointed with Perry's lack of self-preservation in this instance. Like, I thought we were going to see a nice like 2-minute combat thing where he at least tried to move out of the way. He just like let it happen.
Yeah, I guess that was the point.
I had, I mean,
that bloater came out of the hole looking for work, maybe. It was looking around. Yeah. All right, you let me get your head out of here.
Yeah, he was like, pretty much,
it looked like he had a logical thought that was like, oh, that motherfucker with the beard's mine.
Oh, yeah.
I had asked Kyle immediately after. I was like, would you sacrifice looking like Perry? Because that's Kyle's dream look, as we all know from the last episode. That would you want to sacrifice looking like that and get Perry's death? Or would you just say, fuck the old man look that you're looking for and just not have that brutal death?
If it was like having to live his life, and then it would have got to that point and the bloater would have walked to me and I just would have popped real quick myself.
Yeah, instead of having your head
not watching,
your head and spine ripped apart from your body.
Looked horribly uncomfortable.
He's the knight in shining armor. He had to save Kathleen. Yeah.
He looked great.
And that's exactly what we knew he was. Yeah, looked great doing it. That's exactly what we knew his character was. Kyle, I feel like you would do that for me, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Jimmy wouldn't reciprocate it back though.
No, Jimmy would lie to us if he got bit. Yeah, we'd still hang around.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
We can't trust James.
Jimmy would take a bite, turn around, look at Kyle, and be like, "All right, I'm biting you now."
James Michael James, dude, I would freaking bite the shit out of you.
No,
bro.
Don't compare yourself to James Michael James. You're not even the same brand of James Michael James. You're just James.
James.
I'm James Patrick James.
You haven't gotten your second name yet.
Well, James, were you satisfied with how the bloater looked in the TV show? I thought he looked pretty good.
Yeah, I liked him. There's a difference in what they chose to do, but I mean, he just looks like a super clicker. He's a big old broad, just like you would expect from a bloater. But I mean, he is OP. That's what they're supposed to be in the game. I mean, we joked about clickers being OP. Well, bloaters are worse. So I think they did pretty damn good at showing the bloater and showing how pretty much invincible they are. And if our boy Perry couldn't take it out, then I don't think anyone. He was just unloading on that thing, and that thing just ripped his head off.
You would need a huge explosion. That's the only thing I can think of on how you would destroy
like
a
the
bloater.
Truck actually blowing up, maybe.
Yeah, like that would do some damage, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it's too goofy, but like if floaters had like UFC or like WWE movesets where it was always just like suplexes and like choke slams and shit, that would be really funny.
You can only become a bloater if you were a UFC fighter before the outbreak. Like that's why they're so uncommon.
Yeah.
I'm curious of how you get to that point.
So there is a big difference, and Tyler, friend of the pod, brought this up to me separately when he was texting me after listening to our episodes. Me and Brian specifically didn't bring this up because they haven't really said it at all in any of the episodes, but Tyler did bring up the fact that they said it in the after episode for episode maybe like 2 or 3. And the big thing that's different in The Last of Us TV show versus the game is that in the game they have spores. And it's for a second when I saw the trailer, I thought they were still going to go for it because we see Bill wearing the gas mask. But there's situations in the game where if you go underground, You have to wear a gas mask because if you breathe in the spores, it'll infect you.
They provided an instance of in the game where you would have the gas mask, and that would have been that episode one. I said the dude became one with the wall. That would have been in the games. You would have been masking up.
Masks on. Yeah.
Yes. So
they literally go like masks on when they see something coming up that could be where spores are. And the bloaters literally are so OP that they are like exploding pieces of them and their spores coming out.
Yeah, that is ridiculous.
Yeah, and I can't even remember.
We got WWE movesets and they're just a walking nuke, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're bloating from, like the spores are like puffing them up and shit. Yeah. And I can't remember how you kill them in the game. I think it's more like hit this button, hit that button after you do some damage. And really, it's like when you see one, it's like, oh, Jesus. OK,
it seems like maybe the backside would be a weakness, because we've seen with the clickers, too, that there is some reserve of the human parts, at least in the backside. Like we could see the back
that
of
ass?
Some of the humans. Yeah, some of the ass, too. Yeah. But maybe the backside.
Bloated ass.
Yeah. They have beeholes. They have access back there.
Yeah.
That's where the spores come from.
How are they secreting? Yeah. The questions that we need answered.
Yeah, true. I guess speaking of that, slightly similar, so obviously the chaos is going on. This is after Perry has been, his head has been separated from his body, and Henry and Sam are underneath the car, and Ellie goes and saves them. And I like Joel's expression. He's like, fuck. Like, he knew she was going to go save him, not just, you know, preserve herself. But she was just stabbing them in the neck, and I thought that was odd.
Yeah.
That, like,
she didn't go for the headshot
stuff, and it just felt like an easy thing to just have her do. But it felt, like, very obvious that she didn't do the heads, which is not, that's not my gripe, but I just, something that I thought about as I watched the scene.
So, Jimmy, that looked like a nailed on one for one when you're shiving.
It does look like what they do. And
if you successfully stealth a clicker from behind, there's like an animation that you just go through where you shiv them in the neck.
I think the
brain thing is more like Walking Dead rules. I don't know if they ever established that specifically. Like when she kills the one infected that's stuck under the rubble, she does stab it right in the brain.
Yeah.
And we do assume that you would headshot when you're shooting an infected, whether it's a clicker, a runner, or whatever. So I feel like that's just like an established overall thing in all zombie apocalypse that you should brain them. But I guess, in the game,
I was going to say, we're going to brain the zombies.
We're going to brain them up. So, I mean, in the game, if you go up behind the clicker, especially the clicker or a runner infected, whatever, you do shiv them in the neck. So, I mean, I guess they're staying true to the game. But I actually thought that too, Kyle. When I was seeing it, I was like, why wouldn't you just do it to the head? Like, why? Yeah. You know, but I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
I mean, good looks for our girl Ellie, though. She is definitely coming into her own. She's kind of adding to her body count at this point in time.
I want to rewind because I forgot to say this, and it's just hilarious to me. When we go back to the tunnels, when Joel says, get your gun out, Ellie's like,
oh, yeah. She smiles.
She looks at Sam and she's like, I got a gun, bro. Like, she's like,
that
cracks
was
me up. But I mean,
and then she just wastes all of the bullets. So it's
unloaded the clip on the freaking snowplow.
Yeah.
But I mean, all right, we're here. Kyle, Dave, did you assume one of them got bitten during the scene? Like,
I think I audibly said it so everyone in the room could hear. But I was like, there's no way one of them didn't get bitten. It's not the exact same treatment as Tess. Sam wasn't as willing to hide it, but.
Yep.
It was I knew they were so close. They were literally grabbing at legs. There was no way one of them didn't get bit. And I thought for a second, though, because they do run away, like they do seem to walk, like they get up pretty quickly and they're running, like it doesn't look like any of them are injured. So there was like a brief period in time where I was like, OK, you know, I think they got out safe, because there is a decent amount of airtime between that moment and when we get revealed that Sam did get bit. So there was a point where I was like, OK, maybe they did get away safe.
Sam ain't got enough power in them little legs to get off, you know, because they were grabbing and getting after them. And it's like, he's only 8. He can't generate enough, like, to, like, get them actually off of him. Because I remember thinking, like, why? Like, they clearly went under the car. And it was like, why the fuck would you go under the car? Like, I guess in the moment, obviously, it's easy for me to sit on the couch on a Friday night, smoking a little something, drink a little something, and being like, what idiots? Why would you go underneath the car? But, like, it felt like, yo, come on.
Yeah, you're just cornering yourself there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ellie jets into the car, which seemed like a nice little extra level, but obviously she gets chased out of there by a little guy, which I thought when we were watching, I was like, she could totally take that thing.
But it's a clicker. It was supposed to be a clicker. They say that in the after show. And
she would have caught it in the throat and just slammed it into the ground.
Yeah. Those clickers, dude. But I mean, they had a, oh man, there's that infected throat going. But they had a gymnast be the actress. And I mean, she's freaking contortionist. It was really, really cool.
It was good.
And staying along with our young girl clicker, kind of Henry, Sam, Ellie get away. They kind of make it to the outskirts of the town. Joel rendezvous with them. They're like, all right, we're all here. Let's head to the bridge. Not so fast. Kathleen confronts them, holds Henry at gunpoint. I'm just like groaning to myself, like, seriously, this is still your priority?
Yeah.
Does the zombie apocalypse look like my priority number seven to you?
Yeah, right.
Okay, Kathleen, have your moment. Our little girl clicker just takes her out. Joel's like, all right, cool. Let's get out of here.
Yeah.
They skedaddle across the bridge, and that brings us to the apartment scene.
That is my gripe, is Kathleen's death was just, it's stupid, and I guess it's supposed to be stupid in a way because she has been stupid. But like, I think there's a way to like where it's like, you know, when you get like a sudden death in a show and it's like, holy fuck, like when it like if it just starts to happen suddenly. Obviously Red Wedding is like the ultimate example of like a surprise, just like very like blunt, like, okay, the death happened. Hers felt like silly versus like anything.
It was very anticlimactic for the buildup that we got of her. It's for her to, you know, be right there at her, what her goal is, and then to just turn around and have a clicker.
And again, I mean, it could be the point. It goes along with the fact that she was way too one-track minded. She could have probably easily escaped. She said she'd hit a UB to go get revenge. And it was just like the way it happened was kind of like, what a fucking shit end of that character.
Yeah. No. Also, at that point, you've already said all you need to say once you shoot on sight, you know, don't like stop and be like, ha, ha ha, now I get to continue my monologue. It's like, honestly, poorly written death for a poorly written character, in my opinion.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. Maybe if she like, I don't know, if her, I feel like maybe if her and Perry had like a better ending, whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm not the one in the room.
But let's get into this horrible fucking scene. I hate this.
In the video games, Sam and Ellie don't have this night before conversation. They don't do the blood thing, but I'm glad they included her rubbing the blood on the wound for
because I think
the audience who hasn't played the video game is just like, let's try some stuff.
People
were saying, why wouldn't Tess be like gargling her blood?
That was me.
That
was me. I was literally saying, if I'm bit, just Ellie, let me get a cup of blood, girl, and let me just see where that goes. And this is what I guess is also part of why the scene was so hard to watch overall, is because they give the audience a slight hope, a sliver of hope that Sam will make it out of this by Ellie realizing that maybe if she rubs her blood onto the infected spot, that maybe there's a chance of saving Sam. And so one with the first reveal of him getting bit, I was like, fuck, like we were so close to getting everyone out of here without any wounds or scrapes or bites or anything like that. And then we get the buildup of, okay, Sam might live because Ellie's doing this gracious moment of cutting herself and rubbing.
Dude,
and I'm like, there's a slight chance in my head. I was like, oh, come on, he's going to make it. And then the morning comes and he's doing the fucking grandma from episode one, sitting on the bed, just motionless. And I'm like, fuck, it didn't work. I was really hoping. So when she goes up to him and he does the rawr, like scares her kind of thing. I was really hoping like, Sam, good joke. You know, it's a little dark, but, you know, good joke, but he keeps attacking her. And then I'm like, fuck, he actually turns.
So what if he was joking and she just stabbed him in the head? Yeah, and he just
Well, then Henry's outcome is the exact same. Maybe he takes out Ellie, but I think
Joel would have killed him.
Yeah. But
he takes out Ellie. Imagine that.
And before we kind of even get to the Ellie and Sam conversation the night before, huge piece of information is Joel opens up and invites Sam and Henry to join them to Wyoming, which is huge for Joel. You know, he's finally letting more people in. So that was just another glimmer of hope that they give us to distract us from the fact that it's all going to go horribly wrong in a few
seconds. I think though that quote, when like Henry agrees to it, made me kind of realize, okay, There's no, like, the game is Joel and Ellie. It's not Joel, Ellie, Sam, and Henry, you know? Like, yes.
That's the tough part sometimes with, like, these established IPs where it's, like, you have a somewhat of a general idea of the story. Where if this was, like, a completely original story, I would have been all in. Like, yeah, maybe, like, we got more crew. Like, we're building the crew here. We're getting a new crew together. But it was kind of always destined
like
to,
if he had,
to end horribly.
Yeah, like if Henry had said maybe no, I appreciate you offering, maybe okay, then I'm buying into the fact that okay, Sam and Henry make it out. But he says that, I'm like, something has to go wrong here.
Oh, it's something that we didn't mention that plays in directly into this is when they're walking through suburbia and Ellie is like, yeah, like we're going to Wyoming, like you guys should come. And Joel like looks at her, doesn't say anything, and she's like, what, it's a big state, it can fit two more people. that was hilarious. That was a great line.
But
she's like, that's just how he is. He says no, he says no, he says no, and then I just keep bugging him, and then we get a yes anyway.
And she was totally right. She got the yes anyway.
Ellie's great.
And I guess one thing I want to point from Sam and Ellie's conversation the night before Sam turns is Sam asks a question, when you turn into a monster, is it still you inside? And I'm not sure they've explored that concept yet, but what are your guys' opinions of that? I kind of mentioned it in the gas station scene where Ellie has her first kill. Like, was there empathy there that she is like trying to put this humanoid thing out of its misery? Or once you turn, are you just full zombie and there is no more human left? What are kind of your guys' opinions?
I think Kyle said it best during the podcast where he's like, that is a very, you know, mature or, you know, above his level of thinking question for someone his age. I mean, it is a good question to ask because it leads into him revealing the bite and everything and, you know, provides that layer of tension. But it is something to wonder because, like you said, B-Toms, we had talked about it with Ellie putting the one out of its quote unquote misery. We don't know if, you know, they have that mindset still, but if they do, that makes me think, you know, if I'm a bloater, then I must be fucking loving life. I've been around the block for 20 years. I'm the strongest.
I'd be fucking people's elbowing people. I'd be fucking getting after it, dude. I'd be fucking spinning people above my head.
But it is a great
breaking them on my knee.
It is really a great question, though, because then it kind of begs into question of a cure. You know, if all these people are running around as clickers or, you know, stalkers, whatever they are, is there a hope to bring them back? And I don't think we've delved into the science behind the clickers and everything enough yet to know whether there is a shred of humanity left in them. But I think it was a mature question to ask, and it added definitely more intensity to the situation and more heartbreak for what actually happens in the next day.
Yep. I feel like it's got to be like a time thing in the sense that we've seen the, like, the graphic poster in episode two it was where it's like foot is 12 to 24 hours, hip general
neck is like
area,
six,
and then like head is like minutes or whatever. I feel like I've seen so much cordyceps content just like in my For You page, even like the real life, like nature documentaries of how it infects insects in real life and whether it's like a brain thing or it's muscles. And I guess if it's muscles in the beginning, then like your brain thought is still somewhat intact, and I guess after time you kind of lose your sense of self. But it had only been, I guess, what, maybe like 6-ish hours for him, so he might have still had some level of sense of self, and it's kind of his body's just doing it. But I feel like after like a day or two or more that you don't realize who you are anymore.
I think that's where I'm at too.
I think when it comes to The Walking Dead and this show, especially with the scene with Body Otis, our boy John Hanna from Spartacus, which everybody might as well just break it on the pod that Spartacus is coming back. They are going to do spinoff, which is phenomenal. We did cover that as one of our first shows ever on the podcast. Yeah. It was freaking
A great one.
Which means we're going to be covering it again on the podcast.
We're going to have to finish the other two seasons first.
Our girl Athena, if you're out there still listening, we haven't forgotten about you. The Redditor.
One of the OG fans of the pod.
She's still
true
listening.
True friend of the pod. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there is a scene in The Walking Dead that wasn't in the books or the comics, I'm sorry. And I believe they added the Body Otis thing, John Hanna scene, to show, like, you know, it takes over your brain and you no longer have control. I think that it is, you lose yourself, you know, and I think it was a great question to ask because it's a mature question, but at the same time, it's an immature question. You know, when you're an 8-year-old, you're sitting there and you know you're going to change. You're living in this world. You know what's going to happen. You've been bit. And you're saying, like, am I still going to be in there or am I just going to turn into a monster? Dave, like you said, the tension just went from like here to freaking here. And, you know, anyone listening, I put that hand above my head.
Yeah. That was off the screen right there.
Yeah, that was off the screen. But I mean, and also, Kyle, to your point, this is what I want to ask you guys a question.
Oh, yeah. Bring it on.
Is this an L for Ellie? Because this hasn't been established. We talked about it in episode one. But if you're Ellie and you find out he's bit in the leg at his ankle, do you automatically go tell Joel and chop his leg off?
This is what I was saying when we were watching. Yeah. I was like, just chop that motherfucker off.
Yeah.
Did you just send him to his fate
because you just decided to go to bed? Or
I'm not willing to go as far as to say it's an Ellie L and that she like let this happen to him. I feel like it was great that she, and they say it in the after the episode of it's her trying to be this hero that she's being told that she can be, of like her blood is special and like that. And I think that was kind of the idea of it, but I agree 100%. And again, of me sitting on the couch, maybe smoking a little something, drank a little something, and I was like, oh dude, just chop it the fuck off. What are we doing?
Yeah, right. And this is your friend. Like you obviously bonded with this kid majorly. And he says, like, can you keep a secret? And he says, you know, will you stay up with me? So, I mean, she's sticking with his wishes. But if I'm a 14-year-old, I'd be like, yo, we got to get the adults, bro. We got to go get the adults. You just been bitten in the leg. I'm telling Joel, they can decide what to do. This is not my decision.
There's a lot to go into here. One, they don't have a Misty from Yellow Jackets who is just willingly going to take an axe to someone's leg and cut it off. One, because if you put that pressure even on any of the adults, like who are you going to ask, like Henry to cut his leg off? And then he's going to have to hear the shrill cries of his kid. Just...
It would be Joel doing the cut.
But then,
you have to listen.
Joel
to that.
Was doing it. Yeah.
Brad Pitt, don't even think twice. No.
I could tell you exactly how this would go. Henry would say, it's my brother. I have to do it. And then he wouldn't be able to do it. So Joel would do it.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. I'm sorry for cutting you off, Dave. But all I was going to say is there's just, it's almost like Ellie saved Joel and Henry from making a crazy decision like that. A painful decision to decide, all right, we're going to try to keep Sam alive. We're going to chop his freaking leg off. And now he's an 8-year-old who's deaf and is missing part of his leg. It's tough. It's really tough.
The one thing that I was thinking too in regards to all this is that, sure, Ellie could just immediately tell the adults, like, hey, we got to do something about this. But Ellie has seen Joel's reaction to people getting bit. Joel literally was willing to kill Ellie on the spot, even after 10 days of her being bit and not showing signs of being infected. Like, Joel was still willing to go the lengths to just kill her right there. So I think maybe Ellie was thinking that if she had told the adults, specifically Joel, that Joel would show no mercy and just immediately kill him. And she had developed such a friendship with him that she was willing to try cutting herself, sharing the blood, to just and stay awake with him to just confirm if that was going to be enough or not. I just think it all goes back to, I think Ellie just had such a close friendship with Sam that I don't think she was willing to have told Joel that because he would have just killed him.
Yeah, tough scene.
Yeah, it's tough. Around. I mean, every decision in that would be tough. Yeah.
And I will say that you had said that she saved Joel and Henry from making that tough choice of amputating the leg. But I mean, it does get forced into potentially tougher choice of putting a fucking bullet in his head, he doesn't really think that much about. He kind of just, the shot. I mean, he had also said, like, he's never killed anybody. He's never really shot a gun. And it was point blank right there. He headshot while they're scrambling. I was like, all right, this motherfucker's cold blooded.
And I mean, when you think about it too, like, sure, we could cut the leg off, but how are you going to prevent the bleeding? Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's
yeah, with what, though? They don't have fire. Like, I mean, the thing I immediately think of is maybe they shoot a gun multiple times, it gets hot, and then they just press that gun, like, on the fucking leg, which would be horrible, but like, what else are you going to do?
You can't waste bullets.
Yeah, you can't waste bullets.
They take Kyle's boy, Perry, take his hot-ass face.
Yeah.
His beard.
Just cut his beard off. There's your tinder kindling.
Yeah.
It would smell terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
That crusty ass beard.
But mine.
There's plenty of fire out on the battlefield from earlier.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
I think this scene, they did a really good job of like showing Sammy tackle her out into the main living room area.
Henry crushed it. Henry crushed it with his reactions, man. Acting. I felt everything that he was going through with just his facial expressions, the stuttering, just how the look on his face. I felt like I was right in the room with them with how good he was acting in this scene here.
So, I mean, you see an infected, your knee-jerk reaction, if you have a gun in your hand, is to just put a bullet in its head. He does.
Well, he actually, he waits a second. He does, because Joel is about to kill.
Joel's feet.
Yeah,
Joel's about to shoot him, but Henry's trying to, I guess, wait it out to see if Sam actually is trying to hurt her or bite her or something, but he does make that a realization that he is infected.
So, yeah, I just thought it was great acting. He does the act, and then it's like reality hits in the next 5 seconds, and him just trying to calculate and justify what he did, and he just can't compute what just happened, and he makes the decision.
I have chills right now. I have chills. Like, that was such a hard scene to watch. I think
it was like hold your breath. Like, you could have heard a pin drop while we were watching it. Like, no one was even breathing. It's like, holy
I think if
shit.
I was watching this scene by myself, I would have legitimately broke down like into tears.
Well,
like,
I think that's what Paul was doing, because Paul texted us separately.
He was like, I don't think I can watch with you guys, because
I'll probably be crying. I was cutting onions.
My mouth was just on the floor. I was in shock. I didn't expect this. I thought that Henry wasn't going to make it out of here. I didn't think it was going to go out the way that it did. But to see Sam go out first and then Henry piece together that he had just killed the thing that he was solely living for, and all that realization hitting him, and then I mean, it's fucked up, but I love how just quick he was, like after 10 seconds of processing everything and realizing it, just how quick he was, not even a hesitation to just pull the trigger in his head. And it made it that much more painful for Ellie, who had to watch this whole thing
And
this goes into what I was saying with Joel, who was losing himself by just killing a random old man. Now he just watched someone who he was willing to go to Wyoming with shoot himself because he had to kill his brother. Joel is just such a fucking train wreck. No amount of it runs in your genes can pull him out of this.
It's weird, because I was just like, oh, poor Ellie, because at this point it's just another drop in the bucket for Joel. Like, this is a regular Tuesday for him. He sees this shit all the time. But I mean, again, this wasn't as much of a developing the Joel and Ellie relationship episode as like the last one maybe was for them, but trauma bonding. I mean,
It's trauma bonding.
People just having to deal with witnessing this. That's
character in the after episode. They said, and again, the idea of the mirror that Sam and Henry are to Joel and Ellie, of Joel like never having, or not never having, but forcing himself essentially to not have this type of connection with anyone since Sarah, because he doesn't even have it with Tess technically. I mean, he's seems that like Tess says at the end of episode 2, like, you know, I never asked you to meet me halfway or whatever. Like, he always obviously kept her at some level of a distance away from him, and he's seeing what could potentially happen. And this is the words of Craig, our boy, saying like he's watching what can happen to him when you get to that level of having someone that you care about this much in this world. And he looks at Ellie after they do the whole burial, and he's like, fuck, like, I'm starting to feel that way about Ellie. So it's potentially giving Joel, I'm assuming, because I mean, I think at this point we have a good idea of who Joel is. He is thinking of, okay, this is something that could easily happen to the two of us now.
And it
obviously scares the shit out of him.
And to even add to that, of them potentially being the ones in the ground next, it's also, I think he's also seeing Ellie as turning into a little bit more of himself, because at the end of the very, very end of the episode, Ellie is the one that is first one to leave the gravesite, and she's the one telling Joel, like, yo, we got to keep moving. She's just trying to, she's pulling a Joel here. She's just like burying her emotions now. She would rather focus on the mission at hand rather than actually talk through these things. And I think in Joel's reaction to her saying that, I think you can see that, one, he definitely sees them as the next possible victims, but two, that shit, like, Ellie is starting to become like me, and I'm not a great person at all. He definitely doesn't view himself as someone who's, you know, a great human. So I think he doesn't want one. He wants to now protect Ellie even more, but two, also prevent her from following in his footsteps of just being a ruthless, cold-blooded, like killer kind of thing.
Yeah, I wonder how they go with that. I wonder if it will be something that Joel will change about himself because he sees the way it's now impacting Ellie, or it will be like, it'll just be that that's the way the two of them are. I can't imagine them having these types of emotions. We were even talking at the end of the episode as they walk away, and it's like, these motherfuckers need a therapist. Like, they obviously can't talk. They're not going to talk to each other about it in a way that'll be helpful. So like, they need some type of like external opinion, voice, reason, something, but they're obviously not going to get it. They don't really have a choice because every day is, you know, survival. So I think it's going to be interesting. I can't wait to watch it develop. I mean, it's sad, honestly, to watch it develop, but I'm just interested to see where how the story handles it going forward.
I think Joel will finally be the first one to make the first move in terms of reaching out to Ellie, because, you know, in the past, we've seen, you know, Ellie try and ask questions about Tess, just not even just out of curiosity, just because she did have a love for Tess and wanted to get to know her more. And Joel back then was kind of shooting those questions down. But I think Joel will now be on the other side of that, you know, trying to press Ellie a little bit more so he can realize a little bit, like, take a bigger step into that fatherly figure role
and
for her.
I don't know.
He already kind of has last episode after she had to, you know, paralyze the guy. She didn't actually kill the guy, but shoot the guy to help Joel. Joel, like, once they have a second, he's like, hey, you shouldn't have to deal.
He sucked
with all
at doing
this.
It.
I'm sorry.
He sucked at
he
doing
sucks.
It.
He sucks. But, tried, but he's still, he has been trying. And I think we, like you said, I expect to see more of that out of Joel. Mm-hmm. Kind of to tie this whole thing together, I was pissed that they left Sam's Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah, that was, the thing that was sick.
It was sick. It could be useful. I just don't think you leave that
we were gassing that thing up the whole episode. We were like, oh,
yeah,
Sam's so cool.
Awesome. I don't know.
And I get it. It is helpful, but also it is in memoriam for little Sam. Like, that was his toy, and
for sure
that was the identity. But also it's a survival of the fittest. So
whatever, they left it for Sam. I'm fine with it. But that is our episode. Like Kyle said, he looks at the burial ground and is just left to think, this is going to be us inevitably, like, this will happen to me and Ellie. And they're off. But I'm debating whether or not this was my favorite of the first five episodes. I think it's either one or two behind the pilot. Really strong episode, though, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. It was absolutely fantastic. I would say, I mean, three is still like a personal favorite of mine. I think even thinking like of outside, like the context of the show, like obviously we love plot progression and we love watching the action scenes, but three just has like an individual episode of television, I think. Like I had said on that recording, I think it's going to be tough for any episode to pass that episode for me, but I think this is definitely my at least second favorite episode. It was really, really good.
Yeah, I said at the beginning, I'm still sticking with it. This was my personal favorite episode. We get a lot of great emotional moments between Sam and Henry, Joel and Ellie, as well as a great twist in the end with a lot of action with clickers included. So I thought this was, for me, I couldn't have asked for much more in a Last of Us episode. All I know going forward is that I refuse to attach myself to any characters that we get introduced to from here on out, because I can't go through that.
Should've
ever
learned that by now, baby.
I should have, but like I really had hope for Sam and Henry because they were a little bit younger.
They got
But the showrunners are like, nah, we're just gonna.
They gotcha.
Doesn't matter age or what your background is, you're fucked no matter what. Yeah. So I'm definitely not going to be attaching myself to many characters going forward. I only am focusing on Joel and Ellie.
I think that episode 5 was what everyone was hoping for after episode 3. And I agree with you, Kyle. I think that episode 3 is my favorite. I was just so, it just sucked me in for an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and 30 minutes, like a full movie. I was just entranced. Yeah. So I really, really, really enjoyed episode 3. I would say that this is probably the second or third, and they're all so close. But I do think that a lot of people were disappointed with episode 4 because you got that really side quest, but like Bill and Frank's
it was a setup episode.
Yeah, it was a setup episode. Yeah. It had its own story within a story. Phenomenal what it was, but it wasn't pushing Joel and Ellie's story too much. There wasn't too much when it comes to the infected. Brian, yourself, you're like, yo, we haven't really seen any clickers or infected. So I had Justin, friend of the pod, who just had a little baby girl. Give that little shout out.
Congrats.
Congrats to Justin. Our number one fan, I would argue.
Yeah, Justin.
We love you, Justin. Congratulations.
But yeah, so he was saying himself too, like, you know, I really thought episode 4 was going to be more of like a banger action one just because we had 3 come out in the way it did. But, you know, we had 4 set us up for the big number 5. And we're out of Kansas City. We're going to be moving on. We have 4 more episodes left. So
it sucks that they're on foot. It sucks that they're on foot. They were ready to go after episode 3. Yeah. We had a truck. We had supplies. We had a fucking nice pun book. Dude, we were nice killing it. Yeah. And now we have no pun book. We have no truck. We have very scant supplies.
No Etch-a-Sketch.
Yeah.
No Etch-a-Sketch.
We do have a rifle.
That was funny to Alex when we were watching it, and she was like, this is such a video game where, like, we just upgraded our gun. Like, you know, we have our backpack. Like, we're doing a little bit good now.
That is a good gun to have in the game. I will say that much right now. Yep. I feel like we've all been able to give our lasting thoughts on the episode. So that's going to do it for episode 5 coverage of The Last of Us. Before I get into the actual spiel, I'm just going to say, go Birds.
Yeah, it's going to be funny because this will drop after the game. So it's obviously the Eagles are going to win, but on the slight chance that they don't, it'll be funny that I'm now in the video.
Let's go Birds, baby.
Kansas City is a piece of shit in The Last of Us. Kansas City is a piece of shit in the real world until Monday. Then then I can continue to be indifferent about Kansas City. Completely. Let's be honest. Yep. Kansas City, it's certainly on the map. There.
Yep.
Exists. That's going to do it. The Last of Us episode 5. It was a banger. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcasts app, or wherever else you may be finding your podcasts. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And go Birds.
Yeah.
Rip Birds.
Perry. Birds.
Rip Perry.
Endure and survive.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.